Okay, everybody, take a deep breath, because we are about to use phrases like quantitative easing, elastic currency, and inflationary fire. In other words, we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve and ask the question, how has Ben Bernanke done as Fed chief? Which is why I am donning a hockey mask and you might consider shin guards. The debate over Ben Bernanke gets pretty contentious. On the left, columnist Paul Krugman calls his tenure profiles in Fed cowardice. On the right, remember when Texas Governor Rick Perry was also a presidential candidate and he made those ominous remarks about Texans doing something pretty ugly to Ben Bernanke? Ben Bernanke is making history today, talking about the Fed history with students at George Washington University, something no Fed chair has ever done. And we'll have a live stream of the lectures at herenow.org. But our question for today is, how will history view Ben Bernanke? We want to spend a few minutes there with Roger Lowenstein, whose Atlantic Magazine article reflects the debate over Ben Bernanke. The cover has a picture of him with the huge word hero. Inside the story has a huge title, villain. And Roger Lowenstein joins us from WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. So, Roger, which is it, hero or villain?
Robin, take off your shin guards. he's been the good guy in this story. The economy's getting better, and throughout this terrible period, he's been the guy in the trenches, slowly but I think surely pulling us out of the crisis.
Okay, so where is the disconnect? Because we read this is your conclusion and others as well, and we're wondering if part of it might be, well, what he's doing today, trying to tell people what the Fed is, because we're remembering, you know, one of the most striking scenes in the movie Game Change was the Sarah Palin character not knowing what the Fed was. She thought the Fed meant the federal government. So start with, what is the Federal Reserve?
The Federal Reserve, I hope Governor Palin's listening because lots of people can learn from this, right? But the Federal Reserve is a bank to the nation's banks, by extension, to the economy. And you sort of go back to that Monopoly game you played as a kid, or maybe still, and every time you go around Go, you know, you get $200, and that gives everybody enough money to buy Park Place and St. Charles and everything else. Only the American economy is dynamic. Sometimes the prices of St. Charles goes up. Sometimes there are new sorts of properties on the board. So it's the job of the Fed to decide, hey, is $200 the right amount when you pass go? Should it be $250? Are prices going up too much, so we cut it back to $100? And that's pretty tough stuff. But basically, that's what the Fed does. It regulates how much money is in the system.
Well, it was founded 99 years ago. As you said, it was supposed to be sort of this umbrella over all the disparate banks. And it ran into trouble like every 20 years. I mean, there was a debate that seems to be recurring right now. Looking back, how would you characterize this debate between like President Andrew Jackson, who was an opponent of a central bank and this idea of somebody regulating and creating paper money, and a banker who was running the central bank at that time who felt the need for this sort of umbrella?
America has always had two very strong in its view of monetary policy and banks. One, it goes back even before Jackson to Alexander Hamilton and, of course, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson had this vision of, you know, a nation of yeoman farmers. He didn't like banks. He didn't want banks. And Alexander Hamilton, you know, more and less figured that 200 years from now would be a country of J.P. Morgans and Wells Fargos, and that banks were good, they'd lend money to people and, you know, stimulate the economy. This tension continued in Jackson's day. We had something called the Second Bank of the United States, which was a predecessor of the Federal Reserve in the 1830s. Andrew Jackson shut it down basically because he didn't like paper money. He wanted to go back to the gold standard. And we had a terrible depression that followed. And these debates have just gone on and on. You know, we had the William Jennings Bryan cross a gold speech in the 1890s. America, by the way, has been off the gold standard since 1971. But we've had a real revival in recent years, particularly in the person of Ron Paul and the Tea Party and so on, of people who are saying, I don't trust dollar bills. I want to go back to gold. And among that camp, people like Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve as an institution are very unpopular. But you got to understand, in the decades when we did have a gold standard, which was basically the second half of the 19th century, we had terrible depressions every 10 years or so because there wasn't enough money. The thing with gold is you can't create it out of thin air. The Federal Reserve has the power to create money. It's that very power, by the way, that alarms the Ron Pauls.
Well, there's a lot of critics, because this is where we get to the modern day debate. How much money should there be, and how much should the Federal Reserve manipulate? How much is, you know, floating around the country? And I'm just going to take a stab at this, okay? You tell me if I'm right. Is the bottom line here how the Federal Reserve controls how much inflation we have in the country, which is how much money there is in circulation and how much it's worth?
You're pretty nearly there. I mean, we'll leave our shin guards off. But the job of the Fed is to keep the amount of money that's in circulation more or less growing with the size of the economy, so that you know, as there are more businesses, as there are more workers, as there's more need for money, people have enough green stuff to do their bit, right? It's very hard to count how much money there is. It's just there are all sorts of money today. There's money in checking accounts. There's money in now accounts and in stocks and bonds and the bank. The Fed tried in the 80s to say, well, we'll just count the money and see if we have enough. And it turned out not to be easy. So the best tool it has is looking at the inflation rate. And as long as the price of goods is rising at a very low rate, you know, 1% to 2%, that tells the Fed, hey, if the price of green peas is pretty steady, that means the supply of money is growing with the supply of green peas. And that's what we want. However, if the price of green peas starts doubling and trebling, that tells the Fed, you know, I don't think people are that hungry for green peas suddenly. There must be too much money around. We're creating too much.
Huh.
So inflation is the thermometer that the Fed uses to tell whether or not there's too much or too little money being added to the system.
Excellent. Well, think of green peas now. And so, you know, as we just heard you and as we understand it, people start spending their money, but then their demand outpaces the supply of, let's say, green peas. So businesses start raising the prices. So at a certain point, people stop buying because their money isn't going as far to buy those green peas. So now we have money sloshing around. We have green peas sloshing around at too high a price.
And in those high inflationary circumstances, money no longer is sending a useful signal, because in normal times, if the price of something goes up, that tells you that either the supply is down or the demand is higher. And, you know, people either buy less or other people go into the business to provide more. But in inflationary times, the signals get crossed, and because you can't tell if there's a phenomenon going on with the underlying product or it's just that there's too much money. So the price signals stop telling people in the private sector, you know, what we want them to be telling them, which is, hey, we need more, we need less of the underlying commodity.
And Roger, before the break, you were helping us understand inflation and the flow of cash in the country. Critics of Bernanke on the left, like Paul Krugman, say he should put more money out there, risk, you know, higher inflation. But then, as we said, on the right, you have Rick Perry, who said if Bernanke prints more money, we will do something ugly to him in Texas.
It's the Fed's job to print money. You know, if you look at the front of a dollar bill, it says Federal Reserve note. Ben Bernanke and all central bankers of his generation were schooled by two very terrible episodes. One was the Great Depression, in which prices fell about 10% a year, year after year. There was really a shortage of money. I think his foremost concern has been to not repeat that error, to make sure that the Fed doesn't fall short of creating enough money and doesn't let the economy fall into that type of depression. Bernanke also was a graduate student during the 1970s when we experienced a terrible inflation. We had years of 10, 12, 14% inflation when we printed too much money. And that's the danger that, you know, the Rick Perrys are warning about. I think the way Bernanke has handled this tension is to say, look, the problem we have is much closer to depression than inflation right now. We've been through or still coming out of a terrible economic crisis. You know, it was the 10%, now still higher than 8% unemployed and so on.
Yeah, well, how does manipulating inflation, how does that help like a homeowner or an unemployed person?
You've got a mortgage. The mortgage is $100,000. Suddenly, there's inflation, and let's say there's a whole lot of inflation. You know, let's say prices double. But one thing that doesn't double is that $100,000 mortgage, because that's set, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, the value of that mortgage, the burden of that debt has suddenly been halved. By creating that type of inflation, you're helping the homeowner. You're also punishing the bank, let's say a bank that in good faith lent you the money. What an employer says when there's inflation, he says, gee, I can raise my prices. I can sell these green peas for more. That makes it a little easier for me to hire an extra worker because he's still earning the same amount that he was. So I guess I can take on the extra worker. At the margins in that way, it helps employers add more workers.
And we should say it's not, you know, your article isn't an all Valentine to Ben Bernanke. I mean, you're very critical of his blindness early on, not seeing the terrible mortgage-backed securities, not seeing the housing bubble.
Robin, he's made a lot of mistakes, and the hero classification, I'm motivated in part by the thought that this guy has been working so tirelessly and in the main so effectively, and the thought that he is so criticized. You know, he has a lower public approval rating than members of leaders of Congress. The point of this piece was to say, you know, wake up. This guy is doing yeoman's work. Of course, he's not perfect, but in the main and throughout the crisis, this is the guy who's brought us back from the brink. He should be recognized for that.
So we've been talking about some of the Fed's core objectives, which is, you know, monitoring the flow of money in the country. But what about some of the other things that Ben Bernanke's Fed has done, lowering the interest rates to practically nothing? This is on the money that the Fed lends to places like banks, loan programs to small businesses, fining banks. We're reading today the Fed is going to be fining banks that mishandled mortgages. So what's the sense of how Ben Bernanke handled all these other aspects?
Let me talk about two aspects that I think are particularly controversial. One are his specific support to the real estate industry by buying mortgages. The danger in that is, you know, a lot of the way we got in the trouble we got in was the government was tilting the scales and supporting home mortgages and home real estate. And there's a strong sense that we have to get back to a real estate market that's untilted by the government so that people know what houses really cost, what mortgages are really worth. The other aspect that goes right to what you mentioned about low interest rates, recently Bernanke came out and said that he expects interest rates to remain extraordinarily low. Right now they're essentially zero, short-term rates, through the end of 2014. That's a long time. The danger is we want people to go back to saving, not spending. You know, we have all these problems with too much debt at various levels. When interest rates are zero, the Fed is telling people, don't save, spend, because when you put money in the bank, everybody knows this, you're getting nothing. Senior citizens, others on fixed incomes, are getting punished. They're getting, in effect, no return. As soon as the economy can withstand it, we really want to get back to an interest rate where you get rewarded for saving. I have a lot of doubt about whether the Fed is and will really sustain 0% interest rates for another 2.5 years.
I just want to ask you one other thing. And, you know, incoming, it's this quantitative easing, this idea of the Fed buying Treasury bonds. Again, it puts more cash in circulation. What's the criticism there?
Normally, the way the Fed operates is it manipulates the short-term interest rate. And the idea then is that other rates will follow. The short-term interest rate is the rate that banks pay for literally for overnight money. And by the way, it's those other rates, those long-term rates, that have more immediate impact on most people when you go to get a mortgage, a business, getting a loan. But once Bernanke had already brought the short-term rate down to zero, what could he do? The criticism there really is that this is not traditional, that the Fed's supposed to operate on the short end of the market, not the long end of the market. I don't really see it. If the Fed is intervening, it doesn't make a whole big difference to me whether it's buying 30-day bills or 10-year bonds. The Fed's intervening, and I think the criticism is misplaced.
That's the one where Rick Perry said, we'll do things to him in Texas. So, Roger Lowenstein, do you think Ben Bernanke stays on as Fed chair for a third term?
Well, obviously, if a Republican wins, he's not going to stay on. Ben Bernanke is
a Republican,
but,
yeah.
You know, the Republicans obviously are not going to reappoint him. My guess is that even if Obama wins re-election, he won't want to stay on. He'll have been through a grueling 8 years. You know, the one caveat is, should the economy really slip, you know, should Europe fall off the edge, and should something happen so that Bernanke doesn't feel that his work is basically done, then I think he'd feel as though he had to stay on. But if he can look back and say, we went through this terrible crisis, we're coming out of it, you know, I think he's going to go back to teaching, which is where his heart is.
Roger Lowenstein, you can read his Atlantic Magazine article about Fed Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke at hereandnow.org. And by the way, Roger's latest book is The End of Wall Street. Has anyone told them? Roger, thank you so much.
Robin, it's been a pleasure.